OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet.
President Biden is pardoning federal convictions for simple marijuana possession. What's behind his decision? And the U.S. considers its options after OPEC Plus's move to cut oil production.
We heard some members of Congress describe this decision as a slap in the face to the Biden administration and to the United States broadly, and they're looking for ways that they can hit back.
Plus, what happens when a tree is cut down in the woods and no one's around to see it? It's Thursday, October 6th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. President Biden has announced that he will pardon all prior federal offenses of simple possession of marijuana. Senior administration officials say the decision will affect about 6,500 people convicted between 1992 and 2021, as well as thousands in Washington, D.C. In a statement, Biden said he's taking steps to end what he called a failed approach to marijuana that's disproportionately affected people of color. Our health business editor, Jonathan Rockoff, has more on the decision.
This is a major step towards the decriminalization of marijuana possession. I mean, we've seen in recent years, first, a lot of states and cities permit medicinal use of marijuana, and then a whole bunch who have decriminalized it more generally. And now there's 19 states in Washington, D.C. that have legalized adult use of marijuana for recreation. And opinion polls show that a majority of Americans support decriminalizing marijuana. So as a political issue, it could be a winner for Democrats. And perhaps part of the calculus on the Biden administration is, as we head into the final weeks of the midterm election campaign, is here's a popular issue that maybe people on the fence could get behind and then support Democrats. But it's a risky political issue for Democrats as well, because Democrats are facing a lot of criticism on the campaign that they're not tough on crime. In fact, the Republican Study Committee released an agenda last week just talking about how they opposed decriminalizing marijuana.
Biden's also calling on state governors to take similar action, and he's asking regulators to review how marijuana is classified. The U.S. has ordered air travelers who have been in Uganda in the past 21 days to be screened for the Ebola virus. The enhanced screenings will begin Friday at airports in New York, Newark, Atlanta, Chicago, and Washington, D.C. In Uganda, there have been 44 confirmed cases of Ebola, including 10 deaths. The U.S. Embassy in Uganda says cases linked to the outbreak have not been reported in the U.S. and that the current domestic risk is low. Big banks could be on the hook for big losses if Elon Musk's revived offer to buy Twitter goes through. Under the terms of the takeover agreement from April, the $44 billion deal would be paid for in part with some $13 billion of debt from seven banks, including Morgan Stanley, Bank of America, and Barclays. But sources say a decline in markets since the deal was struck could now mean losses in the hundreds of millions of dollars for the banks if they try to unload that debt. Twitter and Musk are in talks again this week over a deal to take Twitter private at $54.20 a share. A person familiar with the matter says they're trying to seal the deal by Monday. We report exclusively that operating losses for ByteDance, the parent company of TikTok, more than tripled to above $7 billion last year as the company sought to sustain its rapid growth. That's according to a financial report shared with employees that gave a rare look into the finances of the closely guarded company. The report also shows ByteDance turned an operating profit in the first quarter of 2022 after years of big losses. The Chinese company has put plans to go public on hold. We reported last month that it's also spending up to $3 billion in cash to buy back shares from investors at a valuation of about $300 billion. Stationary bike maker Peloton plans to cut about 500 jobs, or 12% of its remaining workforce. It's the fourth round of layoffs for the company this year as it struggles to turn itself around. CEO Barry McCarthy says he's giving Peloton about 6 months to do that. If it fails, he says it likely isn't viable as a standalone company. Demand for Peloton's products has plunged as Americans have returned to pre-pandemic routines, and the company's losses have been piling up. It lost $1.2 billion in the most recent quarter. And new federal data on vaping finds Puff Bar is the most popular brand of e-cigarettes among young people, while use of products by Juul, once the most commonly used brand among high schoolers, has declined. The annual survey found that about 14% of high schoolers, about 2.1 million, said they'd used e-cigarettes at least once in the past 30 days. Federal regulators have tried to curb underage vaping by restricting flavors of refillable e-cigarettes. And in 2019, the federal minimum age to buy vaping products was raised from 18 to 21. Coming up, OPEC Plus's decision to cut oil production is complicating its relationship with the U.S. What options are on the table for the world's largest oil consumer? That's after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Oil is once again front and center for the Biden administration, which is considering its options after OPEC Plus agreed to make its biggest production cut in more than 2 years. As we talked about on yesterday's show, the cartel's decision could mean a rise in energy prices, which the Biden administration wants to avoid. It's also renewing questions about OPEC's power over oil prices and sparking new proposals for how the U.S., which is the world's largest oil consumer, may respond. So what options does the U.S. have here? Joining me now to talk about it is Wall Street Journal energy policy reporter Tim Pucco. Hi, Tim. Thanks for being here.
Sure thing.
So, Tim, President Biden said he was disappointed by OPEC Plus's decision to cut oil production. Let's talk about how this marks a shift in what had been, for the most part, smoother relations between the U.S. and the alliance. What does this mean for their relationship?
It's entered a period seemingly of open hostility. Plenty of people in Washington, not just the Biden administration, but many members of Congress, said that they saw the decision from OPEC, which is kind of de facto led by Saudi Arabia, as an outright alliance with Russia. And right now, you can't make enemies on Capitol Hill more quickly than if you're aligned with Russia. That is the best way to do it. And so we heard some members of Congress describe this decision as a slap in the face to the Biden administration and to the United States broadly. And they're looking for ways that they can hit back, policies that they might be able to implement to go after OPEC and even potentially break it up.
And we know that the U.S. did try to improve relations with Saudi Arabia earlier this year. What's the status of that relationship right now?
The Biden administration made a much ballyhooed trip to Saudi Arabia to meet with Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. They left with the impression that the Saudis would do more to get oil into the market and to keep prices relatively low. But even from, the very week that happened, Saudi officials were tempering expectations. They kind of downplayed the idea that they made any such commitment and said that even from that point, that they would do what they felt is necessary to stabilize the oil market. For the Saudis and for their allies in OPEC and even their allies outside of OPEC, like Russia, stabilizing the oil market isn't always keeping prices low. Plenty of times they want to keep prices elevated, if not outright high. And right now, there's a lot of economic uncertainty around the world. There's fears of a global recession of some kind, or maybe at least a smaller slowdown. And the Saudis are saying now, in light of that possibility, the giant oil producers of the world really need to cut back, or the market could completely fall apart. They've even at times framed this as though they're helping the United States by putting a floor under prices in this way. Of course, U.S. leaders like low oil prices that turn into low consumer prices, and they don't at all share that point of view.
President Biden said the U.S. is now considering its alternatives and how it will respond to OPEC Plus's decision. Tim, what are some of the options on the table right now?
Plenty of leaders in Congress have come out pitching different bills. Some of them, I think people who watch the space would consider them rather extreme or at least certainly aggressive. One of the bills that was announced yesterday is from Senator Markey reintroducing a bill that tries to get OPEC members into consultation with the president with the ultimate goal of getting them out of OPEC or at least getting them to relent from some of their decisions and threatening to take OPEC and its members in front of the World Trade Organizations if they do not. There was a bill from Senator Casten and other Democrats in the House that would require the United States to remove its military forces from Saudi Arabia and from the UAE. The other major elephant in the room is a bill called NOPEC. which stands for the No Oil Producing and Exporting Cartels Act. It pretty much makes its intent clear. It would give the Justice Department the power to sue OPEC members under the Sherman Act and under antitrust grounds. And it would give the Justice Department the opportunity or the chance to try to break up OPEC or to get financial compensation for the United States and for U.S. consumers from OPEC members in response to their efforts to raise prices. That would ultimately lead potentially to asset seizures. You can imagine with a threat like that, OPEC members, especially Saudi Arabia, do not take kindly to that idea. All the analysts and lobbyists I talked to said that it really illustrates that Washington as a whole, whether it's the White House or whether Congress, is taking a very aggressive and even hostile posture to confront Saudi Arabia and its other OPEC allies.
And we know oil and oil markets are top of mind right now for the Biden administration. What are you hearing from the U.S. oil industry right now?
I'm hearing more frustration. They've really been frustrated throughout the Biden administration. They see a lot of the Biden administration policies and a lot of its threats as working at odds with one another. From their perspective, they don't want export bans, which is one thing that the administration has refused to rule out. They don't want the administration to play nice with OPEC. They want the administration to enact policies that encourage more oil and gas production from within the United States. You know, the problem there is that that really conflicts with the Biden administration's climate goals. And it's become a conundrum that the administration doesn't have a lot of good ways to get out of. If you want to reduce emissions while also keeping prices low, those two things work at odds a lot of times. And the oil industry would like the administration to say that they're less interested in emissions reduction and just get behind U.S. oil and gas production. But that's just something the Biden administration hasn't been willing to do. And it is setting up the next few months to be potentially very difficult and for even more conflict between not just the Biden administration and OPEC, but also between the Biden administration and domestic oil and gas producers here in the United States.
That's Wall Street Journal energy policy reporter Tim Pucco. Tim, thanks so much for joining me.
Sure thing. Thank you for having me.
And finally, for more than a year, the Portland suburb of Gresham has been haunted by a criminal who's been chopping down trees for no apparent reason. More than 700 trees have been felled, and it's cost the city more than $250,000 to haul them away and plant new ones. So who is the Gresham lumberjack? Authorities are stumped. Local detectives haven't had time to investigate much, being busy looking into people crimes, so the city's ecologist, Matt Wallace, is stepping up. He's added detective work to his duties, putting up signs, mounting cameras, and rooting through the crime scenes on the trail of the rogue tree cutter. Our reporter Zusha Ellenson says Wallace was having tough luck until he noticed something from the cameras.
So he's pouring through these photos, and then finally he gets a clue. He sees a guy who appears in the pictures near every area that's been chopped down. And so that's his very, very big clue. And he's really excited. The picture shows a guy with a backpack, kind of a wiry guy in his 40s or 50s. So he brings it to the cops and he brings it to the local people who work with homeless people in the area. He's like, I think this might be the guy. Do you recognize him? No one recognized him. So now they're back to square one, looking for this person or persons who's cutting down trees.
While they may have been barking up the wrong tree, Wallace and his team are looking forward to getting back to their regular work of caring for the city's natural resources. They're hoping to catch the offending logger, but they say they'd be happy if the culprit just called it quits. And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.